This is NBC Nightly News, Thursday, October 12th. Reported by Garrick Utley with David Brinkley's Journal.
Good evening. On the day President Nixon took his campaign to the South, to Atlanta, Georgia, John Chancellor went along, and that's why he's not here this evening. Other news involves Henry Kissinger and his peace efforts. There was a lot of activity in Congress today, including the death of a tough anti-busing bill. And David Brinkley will have some thoughts about Congress, too. But first, the Vietnam peace efforts. Henry Kissinger is back in Washington after 4 days of private meetings with North Vietnam's top peace negotiators in Paris. And tonight, he is reporting to President Nixon. The meetings were the most intensive Kissinger has ever held with the North Vietnamese. That, plus statements by President Nixon and other top administration officials, that peace efforts were at a very sensitive stage, fueled speculation and hope that a peace settlement was near. It may be, but as of now, there is no hard evidence of it. Nor was there any sign of progress at today's regular peace talk session. Lloyd Dobbins reports on that and on Henry Kissinger's final day in Paris.
Again today, expectations far exceeded reality at the Paris peace talks. This was the first public meeting after an unprecedented 4 days of secret talks between Dr. Henry Kissinger and the two North Vietnamese negotiators. No one said anything about that. Ambassador William Porter went into the public meeting without making a statement. And Nguyen Vy, who replaced North Vietnam's Xuan Thuy, paused just long enough to condemn the recent American bombing of Hanoi. Inside, it was the usual round of charges and criticisms, questions that got no answers, and restatements of positions. If there has been any progress toward a settlement, there was no hint of it when the delegates left after today's meeting. At about the same time, Dr. Kissinger left Paris, also saying nothing. Because of Xuan Thuy's absence from the public meeting, there was speculation that Kissinger had had a fifth meeting with the North Vietnamese this morning. But later today, the White House said he had not, that there had been only 4 meetings. Dr. Kissinger's next meeting will be with President Nixon, and the president will be told what was said, by whom, and what the possibilities for an agreement are. Lloyd Dobbins, NBC News, Paris.
South Vietnam's president, Nguyen Phan Thieu, will certainly be the key figure in any peace settlement. Today in Saigon, more than 10,000 people, mostly students, attended a rally organized by Thieu. Thieu told the crowd that he still believes in a military solution rather than a negotiated settlement, and again rejected any thought of a coalition government. Not surprising, since Thieu would certainly lose power in any new government. A report on Thieu's rally from Bob Jones.
The Saigon government borrowed a page from its communist enemy to the north. Parade and pageantry and exhortations to resist the aggressors. It all seemed time to play against speculation that the Kissinger-Thieu talks will bring an end to the war and perhaps a change in the administration in South Vietnam.
Probably no one in South Vietnam, except President Nguyen Van Thieu, knows exactly what kind of a plan is being formulated in Paris, but the rumors are very strong that Thieu is going to be asked to step down in favor of a caretaker government. And demonstrations of popular support like this one give Thieu a point of resistance.
Thieu has suddenly become a very visible public figure, especially now that people are talking about his possible ouster. Not at the rally was Senate President Nguyen Van Nguyen, the opposition leader often mentioned as a likely caretaker government figurehead. Thieu said he still stands ready to resign if there are supervised general elections. He was no more receptive to the idea of a coalition government with communists and neutralists than he has been in the past. Coalition, he said, means death. Thieu got no applause during his 15-minute talk and seemed to draw little interest. In fact, the students looked positively bored by it all. Saigon has never gone in much for this sort of thing, but neither has the political situation ever seemed so desperate. Bob Jones, NBC News, Saigon.
American warplanes bombed North Vietnam again today, but there were reports that U.S. pilots were working under restrictions in the Hanoi area. Those reports were denied. In the diplomatic quarter of Hanoi yesterday, the French mission was badly damaged, the roof of the Algerian embassy was caved in, and there was minor damage to the Indian mission. And several people were killed or wounded, including a French diplomat. He is still in serious condition. So far, the United States has not conceded outright that the diplomatic buildings were bombed. It has said that they could have been hit accidentally. but it is also said that falling North Vietnamese missiles could have caused the damage. Nevertheless, the French government announced today that President Nixon sent a personal message of regret to President Pompidou.
NBC Nightly News is brought to you by Phillips Milk of Magnesia. Mint flavored or regular, Phillips Milk of Magnesia is the kind of laxative doctors recommend most often.
Don't you love your grandchildren?
Well, of course I do. I just don't feel up to having them for the entire weekend.
Is it irregularity?
Mm-hmm. But I'm not taking any harsh laxatives.
Then take Phillips Milk of Magnesia. It's gentle.
Doctors recommend Milk of Magnesia more often than anything else. When you need a laxative, get Phillips Milk of Magnesia, the kind doctors recommend most often.
Hey, this isn't Alpo.
Honey, it's just like Alpo, only cheaper.
Read the ingredients.
Meat byproducts, soybean meal, cracked barley, that's cereal.
Now check Alpo.
Beef chunks and meat byproducts with all the vitamins and minerals needed for a complete and balanced diet.
And not a speck of cereal.
Baby, from now on, it's Alpo for you.
Doesn't your dog deserve Alpo?
President Nixon, who has done most of his campaigning so far from the White House, today did it among the people, hundreds of thousands of people. The president flew to Atlanta, Georgia, for a reception for Republican leaders in the South, and John Dancy was there.
Richard Nixon came to Atlanta as a candidate, but he was received as the President of the United States. Thousands were in the streets, drawn in part by posters which went up several days ago saying, "Bring your family, see and greet President and Mrs. Nixon." The careful advance preparation did its job. There was plenty of confetti and the streets were crowded. The White House quoted police as estimating the crowd at 700,000, but no independent estimates were available. At one point, the president got out of his limousine and stepped into the crowd, shaking hands and signing autographs.
When the president arrived at the hotel where he was supposed to speak, he was met by a group of anti-war demonstrators. They engaged in a shouting match with the president's supporters.
Inside, speaking to Republican leaders, he appealed for Southerners to give up their traditional support for the Democratic Party.
What I am trying to do is to appeal to all. That's why we seek what I call a new American majority. All that I ask as you go back to your states is take this message. Join the new American majority. Join it not as region against region or party against party or class against class, but join it in order to build a better, freer America for every person in this country. Thank you.
What the Nixon campaign was trying to do here in the South with this show of enthusiasm and support was to send a message to other Southerners. And the message was that this year it is perfectly respectable for Southerners to vote Republican. John Dancy, NBC News, with the Nixon campaign in Atlanta.
John Chancellor, who has followed many presidential campaigns, followed President Nixon to Atlanta today, and he has some observations on how the day went.
Traveling here to Atlanta with the presidential party today, a reporter is struck by the fact that this is not so much a Republican campaign as a Nixon campaign. Mr. and Mrs. Nixon were met at the airport here by a total of 11 people, a bipartisan delegation. The president and Mrs. Nixon rode together alone in their car through the large and cheering crowds which met them here today. The president spoke for almost a half an hour to a group of Republicans, but my notes show that he mentioned the Democrats once and the Republicans once. He talked much more about the new American majority. In the old days, presidential candidates and incumbent presidents used to travel around the country embracing local candidates, saying, "Send my friend Smith to the Congress. Send my friend Jones to the State House." That is not happening in the Nixon campaign. The Nixon campaign, in fact, is precisely that, the Nixon campaign. Garrick?
President Nixon returned to Washington this evening, and he returned knowing that he has a good chance of carrying the South, all of it. Douglas Kiker has been in the South to test the president's strength, and here's what he found.
When Richard Nixon first ran for president 12 years ago, the South was solidly Democratic, and the word Republican was still a dirty word down here. But now things have changed. Now the South is Nixon country. There are several reasons why the South is changing its traditional voting patterns. Lifestyles in the new, modern, bustling southern cities such as Atlanta are about the same as in all other big cities. And thousands of new people who have moved here from other states outside the South are lifelong Republican voters. In the rural South, the small town South, white voters who are lifelong Democrats simply have not taken to George McGovern.
I don't think that people are taking on to a whole lot of that McGovern says.
You going to vote Republican?
I'm afraid I am.
Why is Georgia so strong for Nixon this time?
Well, I just don't think much of McGovern.
This fall, Republican candidates are mounting serious challenges in U.S. Senate races all across the Deep South. In Georgia, the Senate challenger is Republican Congressman Fletcher Thompson. Thompson's strategy is to identify himself as a Nixon man and to try and identify his opponent, State Representative Sam Nunn, as a McGovern man.
I think that certainly the fact that McGovern is, well, he basically doesn't stand for anything we in the South stand for. And that undoubtedly has to have some reflection in the election.
Sam Nunn is still favored to beat Thompson, but it's going to be close. So Nunn is campaigning frantically and trying to stay as far removed from George McGovern as possible.
But you're keeping about as far away from George McGovern as it's possible to stay, aren't you?
Well, if I see him first, we're not going to be together, that's for sure.
So the old one-party Democratic South is no more. If enough new Southern Republicans are elected to the Senate, that could help put the Senate under Republican leadership. And if President Nixon carries the South solidly, that will give him half the electoral votes he needs to win. And if both these things happen, it means that the president's famous Southern strategy has worked beyond all expectations. Douglas Kiker, NBC News, Lovejoy, Georgia.
Senator George McGovern was campaigning today in Boston and in Minneapolis. In Boston, McGovern said that if elected, he would choose a Secretary of Defense from a group of officials who tried to convince former President Johnson to scale down the Vietnam War. McGovern said former Defense Secretary Clark Clifford, former Pentagon Deputy Cyrus Vance and Paul Warnke, and retired General James Gavin would be the candidates.
She's 6 years old, and she lives in a beautiful world. You're her grandmother, and you don't sit back and watch that world. You become part of it. These are wonderful years, and you can really enjoy them when you do the right things to take care of yourself. And because you do, you don't forget your Geritol. Geritol every day to make sure you get the iron and seven vitamins your body needs. Take care of yourself. Get the most out of life.
This is an important election not only for me, but for those of you in this city.
Our candidate is confident she won't be embarrassed by loose dentures when she talks, because Orafix denture adhesive holds and keeps holding to help her speak clearly.
As for my honorable opponent, well, I'd like to make this crystal clear.
Our ingenious ingredient helps spread Orafix evenly so you get a tight seal that holds your dentures.
Thank you.
Orafix helps you speak clearly without embarrassment. Use Orafix, the seal of confidence.
There will be no anti-busing bill passed by Congress this year. A tough bill to curb busing of school children died in the Senate today that had been passed by the House of Representatives. The bill was put aside after supporters failed for a third time to override a filibuster by Northern liberal senators who opposed the measure. The House of Representatives today approved President Nixon's five-year, $30 billion revenue-sharing program. The Senate is expected to approve the bill, too, and payments to states, cities, towns, and counties could begin by the end of this month. Busing and revenue sharing are both controversial issues. So is President Nixon's request for authority to cut the federal budget any way he wants in order to keep this year's spending within $250 billion. The House of Representatives has approved the request. The Senate will take up the bill tomorrow, and a floor fight is expected. David Brinkley has some thoughts about the president's request and Congress's reaction. David.
What is happening in Congress is momentous and historic. President Nixon pressured Congress to hold the federal spending down to $250 billion. He said otherwise there'd have to be a tax increase and it would be Congress's fault, not his. So the House of Representatives has voted to hold the spending down to 250, and to give the president the power on his own to cut any federal program in any amount to hold to that figure. No president has ever had that power. The House voted to hand over to the president, from now until next summer, its most important and effective power, deciding how to spend the money. It would further diminish the power of Congress and further increase the power of the presidency. In the debate on this, one member said this would make the president a dictator. Another member responded, "I'd rather have a dictator for 9 months than to have a dictator permanently, and that's what we'll get if we don't stop the spending and the inflation." Well, then the House voted, and it said, in effect, that spending did need to be held down, but that Congress lacked the ability or the will to do it, and so it would turn it all over to the president. The Senate votes on this tomorrow. Nobody is sure how it'll go. The Senate leader says if this passes, Congress may as well go home and stay. It is true that in terms of structure, equipment, and staff, Congress is poorly equipped to deal with all that money. And the result over the years is huge debts, deficits, and inflation. Well, Congress could reorganize and equip itself to do this job, but so far it has refused. This new idea, if it becomes law, will give the president all this power to control the money for 9 months only. But in government as elsewhere, history shows that one who has power and cannot use it effectively will lose it to someone who can. Garrick?
There was a new offshoot today to the Watergate affair. Senator Edmund Muskie said he is thinking about suing President Nixon's reelection committee and certain White House officials. He thinks they may have violated his civil rights through political espionage and sabotage of his unsuccessful campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination. Congressman Wright Patton made another attempt today to investigate the Watergate affair. He got nowhere. Carl Stern reports.
The hearings were supposed to begin at 10 a.m., but the hour came and went without the witnesses or even a quorum. Republicans boycotted the meeting, as did those invited to testify, former Nixon re-election chief John Mitchell, Finance Chief Marie Stans, White House lawyer John Dean, and current campaign chairman Clark McGregor.
President Nixon's campaigners are telling the American people they have no right to know, and that their elected representatives in the Congress have no right to know. President Nixon has pulled down an iron curtain of secrecy to keep the American people from knowing the facts. President Nixon is responsible for those four empty chairs. He's responsible for this secrecy, for the elimination of the people's right to know. How far has this administration gone to put down and harass its enemies? How far has it gone to destroy the Democratic Party and the two-party system on which this government rests? We better find out before it's too late.
But additional committee members, enough to vote to force witnesses to appear, never arrived. Patman tried again at 3 p.m., but again Republicans stayed away to avoid giving the committee a working quorum. They accused Patman of breaking committee rules and calling the quick meetings and of playing politics. Later, Patman indicated he would not try again for hearings before Congress's scheduled adjournment this weekend. He did instruct committee staff investigators to assemble a report on whatever they've discovered, but staff members indicated it would contain no blockbusters likely to break the case wide open. Carl Stern, NBC News, Washington.
And there is this footnote to the Watergate story this evening. Three of the men awaiting trial for organizing the break-in told the court that they have been followed around Washington, D.C., and two of the defendants, former White House aide E. Howard Hunt and James McCord, former security advisor to the president's re-election committee, complained that their telephones are being bugged.
I'm Ewell Givens. Many consider me an expert on natural foods like cattails. Yes, they're edible. I look for natural ingredients in my food. That's why grape nuts is part of my breakfast. This is a wholesome cereal made from wheat and barley. These natural ingredients are baked into crunchy nuggets and fortified with 8 essential vitamins. Its naturally sweet taste reminds me of wild hickory nuts. I call grape nuts my back-to-nature cereal.
The current wave of fighting around Saigon today claimed its first American life. One American military advisor was killed and another wounded in the ambush of a South Vietnamese convoy just 25 miles south of the capital. Just north of Saigon, the South Vietnamese claim to have driven enemy troops out of several hamlets that they captured last week, but fighting continues around some of them. One hamlet recaptured by government soldiers today is on Highway 13, 22 miles north of Saigon, and Dennis Trout was there.
South Vietnamese soldiers recaptured a strategic hamlet north of Saigon Thursday morning. The North Vietnamese had held Sam Sui Hamlet for nearly 1 week before government troops finally mounted a sustained push to retake it. After nearly a full day of fighting, the South Vietnamese had taken only a part of the hamlet, and that was confined to the east side of the road. Today, the government opened with a stronger move, airstrikes. Each time the American warplanes pulled up from a bomb run, North Vietnamese anti-aircraft guns hidden away in nearby tree lines would begin to clatter. The airstrikes did have a telling effect. Fire started by napalm burned almost everything not leveled by the initial high explosives. The liberal use of air power also cut down on military casualties, but there was still shooting and the frontline troops took losses. As they were evacuated, the full extent of the damage in the hamlet became apparent. The civilians rushed in on the heels of the soldiers to see what they could recover, and it was not much in most cases. Their homes were rubble, their way of living destroyed. Village officials told the people to count up their losses and apply for government repayment. In reply, most of the peasants agreed with an old man who said the government could never repay all that he'd lost.
The people here are not picking up to repair and begin a new life. They're salvaging what they can and leaving. Both civilians and military agree the fighting north of Saigon is by no means over. Dennis Trout, NBC News, Sam Sui Village, South Vietnam.
Last week's casualty figures in South Vietnam were released in Saigon today. American combat deaths were much higher than they have been in a year, and that was because 20 men were killed when a shell exploded aboard the heavy cruiser Newport News. Altogether, 21 Americans died in combat last week. 53 were wounded, most of them aboard the cruiser. South Vietnamese combat dead totaled more than 400. South Vietnamese wounded more than 1,700. In the air war over North Vietnam, more than 2,000 strikes were flown last week. One American plane was shot down. Two American airmen were lost. In Washington, the Senate voted 84-2 today to accept General Creighton Abrams as the Army's new chief of staff. Abrams was the American commander in Vietnam during the unauthorized bombing raids on North Vietnam. Investigation of those raids, as well as some criticism of Abrams, held up the vote for several months.
You know how to tell good tomatoes. You look for firm onions and meat that's juicy and red. These are things that go into spaghetti sauce. But how do you tell a good spaghetti sauce? One way is to look at it. This is Chef Boyardee. You can see it's rich and thick with tomatoes. You can see chopped onions and the lean ground meat. Chef Boyardee's spaghetti sauce. You can see how good it is.
I don't know if it's a cold or sinus.
Hey, what's wrong?
Oh, Jim, I feel all headachy and feverish.
You ought to take some Dristan tablets. They work on aches and fever.
And Dristan works directly on the critical sinus areas where colds infection can breed when they fill with congestion. Dristan opens stuffy sinuses, helps drain congestion fast.
Hey, how is that cold now?
I almost forgot it.
Dristan tablets, strong medicine for sinus colds miseries.
The 1972 Nobel Prize for Medicine today was awarded jointly to Dr. Gerald Edelman of the United States and Dr. Rodney Porter of Great Britain. Edelman of Rockefeller University in New York City and Porter of Oxford will share the $100,000 prize for their studies in immunology. The government of Chile today declared a state of emergency in half of its provinces because of a nationwide trucking strike. There have been 400 arrests since the strike began last night, and today some businessmen and shopkeepers voted to shut down tomorrow in sympathy with the truckers. Prisoners at the District of Columbia jail ended their rebellion early today, releasing 11 hostages. In return, the prisoners were promised some reforms and a pledge of no reprisals. Britain's Queen Elizabeth was jeered by students today when she visited Stirling University in Scotland. Reports said the students were unhappy over the cost of the royal visit. They said the money could better have been spent on them. The London Express reported today that American gun dealers are almost the only source of weapons for the Irish Republican Army. The newspaper listed dealers in New York City, New Jersey, and Florida as being the main suppliers. The Oakland A's won the American League pennant today, defeating the Detroit Tigers 2-1 in their final playoff game. Oakland meets Cincinnati in the World Series beginning Saturday. NBC coverage begins at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Trading was light today on the stock markets, but prices dropped sharply. The Dow Jones Industrials were off almost 9 points. On the New York Exchange, the average price of a share lost 35 cents. On the American Exchange, the average price of a share lost 9 cents. The government has steadily revised upward its figures on the number of drug addicts in the United States. As of now, the estimate is over 600,000 addicts. Today, some new figures on drug abuse were released, and their implications are even more shocking because they involve only the young. A special New York State commission says that almost one half of New York City's high school students are on drugs of one kind or another, and that one fifth of the youngsters in junior high schools are too. Many people like to believe that New York City is unique. Perhaps it is. Good night for NBC News.